everyone. Thanks for keeping track. We are back after a bit of a layoff. I'm interviewing our co-host, Roisin McGettigan, today. In this episode, Roisin and I talk about mental health in athletes. This is a big topic. We've been wanting to talk about it for a while, and it's gaining more and more exposure in the media, with prominent athletes discussing and sharing their own struggles. Roisin, who is a licensed mental health counselor who works primarily with athletes and was a professional athlete herself, gives us an oversight to a growing body of research on mental health in athletes. This is a broad and general and very important topic. So today we zoom in because you could fill multiple podcasts with this information and more information that we won't go into. But we primarily focus on our own experiences as athletes and Roisin's work, which is like interesting because it's at the intersection of sport performance psychology, which is something we hear a lot about, and then deeper issues around actual mental health therapy and, you know, how those two impact each other, meet each other, how one person can sort of need both things addressed. So we hope you enjoy this episode and we hope it starts more conversations. Thanks for keeping track.
Hi, Molly.
Yeah. Hi, Ro. So we haven't been on the podcast in a long time. It's just Ro and I. But I'm actually going to interview Ro for her expertise today because she is, as some of you know, a licensed mental health counselor and a Olympian for Ireland in the steeplechase. And so I feel like that's a great combination of life experience to talk about mental health today. This is a topic we've wanted to talk about for a long time.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And Roisin works with a lot of athletes in her practice.
I do.
And it's such a broad term, mental health. So I think first things first is can we zoom in on what we're going to talk about today, Ro, in the context of athletes?
Yeah. So what I kind of wanted to bring into today is I recently just completed a diploma from the IOC on mental health in athletes and mental health disorders in athletes. And the diploma focuses on the research, or kind of the growing research on the athlete population and what we're starting to see in terms of mental health disorders and rates for mental illness and stuff like that. So I just thought some of the findings from that diploma were very interesting and I wanted to bring them in, and I feel like it's the kind of collection of the research to date. And again, it's not completely conclusive. It's growing area, and there's more to come from there for sure. But I thought it'd be interesting to share some of the findings.
Yeah.
And kind of identify, you know, there's this idea that mental health symptoms and feelings and behaviors that are normal in a normal life and normal populations. But then when it comes to mental health disorders, where some of these experiences become significant enough that they impact people's daily life and relationships and sport, actually. So, you know, some of those symptoms include distress, anxiety, depression, sleep disturbances, substance abuse, disordered eating, sleep is a big one, insomnia. And yeah, I just think it's interesting to see, what's emerging from this growing area, and, you know, what's more common in elite athletes and what's as common in compared to the regular population.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting concept, because I feel like this is changing, but I feel like the old school view of athletes is that you're just naturally resilient, nothing gets to you mentally. It's like that Rocky mentality of you just plow through everything in life and nothing can keep you down. So obviously we're humans. We know now that's not true. What do the stats say athletes can be more predisposed to? What are things, what is that breakdown?
Yeah. And I think I'm with you on that. I always thought, sport is a protector of people's mental, well-being, and it's a really great resource for people. And it is, and it still is, right? And actually some of the kind of things you learn through sports are actually really great for helping people be well mentally and physically. But then there's also things that, you know, you're susceptible, especially at the elite stage. So some things that are shown that are more common in elite athletes are eating disorders, and in specifically more disordered eating, actually, versus eating disorders. And there's a kind of a difference between the two of those. Some substance use disorders, especially post-career. ADHD is shown to be higher in the athlete population, just slightly, compared to the normal population. Gambling disorders, and then sleep disorders. So actually something like 65 or something percent of Olympians report having like sleep issues. So that might be surprising to the population, but it's not surprising to us, right? I know.
The night before a race.
Yeah.
Or is that different? This is more chronic sleep issues, probably.
Well, it's not always just chronic. It's just, you know, it's just whatever, whenever these tests are done. But I think with all the, with the like early training for some athletes, or like the travel and all of these things, that actually sleep disturbances are kind of common. Even though sleep is so important for athletes, we also know there's so much research on the benefits of sleep for athletes. So things like that. And then the things that are as common as the normal population, again, some more sleep stuff, and then depression and anxiety and PTSD. So those are things that are as common, or shown to be as common. So I don't know if any of those surprise you or not, Molly. But, you know, sometimes people, you know, don't necessarily treat mental illness. Or coaches aren't so interested, or maybe there's the stigma still around it. And these are things that are like barriers for athletes getting help and getting support they need. So we want to just know that I want people to know that actually athletes' well-being really does affect their performance, if that's what coaches are interested in. But, you know, it also affects the return from injury and illness, and taking care of an athlete's well-being is good for performance. It's not just, oh, that's nice. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way that, like, a support person around an athlete, whether it's a parent or a coach, or I guess those would be the two closest day-to-day people that check in with an athlete, like, some sort of screening they could do? Or is it really more reliant on like athlete self-reporting stuff?
There is actually, and we can share it actually in the comments of this, and the IOC actually created these screening tools. So there's a screening tool for professionals, but then there's also a kind of recognition tool that helps parents and coaches to kind of ask them certain questions for athletes and see how they're feeling, and then identify, okay, do they need to get more help here? So there's some two nice little tools, the SMART, I think that's called, SMHAT one, and it's like a simple little tool that parents and coaches could use.
Okay, we'll link, so we can link to those worksheets. Oh, that looks really helpful. Yeah. Everyone, there's like a worksheet with, looks like there's prompts and like sort of some screening, like things you can rate, it looks like.
Exactly, with some little questions, and they help people kind of go, okay, does this athlete seem okay? Great. And if not, if there's a couple of questions of, hey, if they've answered these, we should go and do this next step. So kind of clearly trying to map that out for people. Which I think is a really important tool.
Yeah, and it's smart. We'll link that. Going back a little bit, Ro, like, what was your motivation to get into this field? Like, did your career as an athlete include struggles like this, or you just always found it interesting, or this is just how you want to help people? Yeah. Like, dive into that a little bit, just for some background, because I think people will be interested in the personal connection.
Yeah. So when I went to Providence College, I just took random classes, and was really interested in the psychology classes I took, and just thought it was so fascinating, just the science of behavior, and also just kind of observing people on my team and seeing like some people can handle stress, some people can handle performance, some people can't, different things, different factors that were going on that were just outside of the actual physical training we were doing. And I just was so interested in it and curious about it. And then as my own career progressed, I worked with a friend of mine who was a psychologist who kind of worked with athletes. And I learned a lot from her, and it really helped me perform better at the international stage. And I just was so interested in that topic and growing in that area because I felt the benefits myself. And then actually it was post the Olympics myself, I came back and I was just like, everything was about getting to the Olympics and performing there. And that was great. I had like support around that. But when I came back, it was just this kind of like you're shot out of the cannon and you're like, you're at the end of the tunnel and you're like, what's ways up, what's ways down? And do I have to just get back into the tunnel and keep going again? And it's really discombobulating. And
You're out of the orbit of the goals.
Yeah,
you're just like floating around.
Yeah,
what do
exactly.
I do now?
Yeah, you're just going to spot it, come out of that tunnel and the tunnel vision that you needed. And I needed, and it was like such a big kind of driver, like it kind of like the peak of the wave had like crashed down. And it's a natural part of the cycle of goal setting, and I didn't know that at the time. And but I know it now that, like, you know, when you have a big goal, there's this kind of peak and then there's a crash, and that's the completion of that cycle, right? But in that backwash of that, it was like, well, what's up, what's down? And just kind of navigating that was just like, where's all the support now? Like, what's my purpose now? What do I do now? And I kind of had to navigate that and myself, and I came through it fine and kind of got back into it. But I did notice that around me there was people who were struggling, and there was, you know, different sports, different other Olympians, and I realized, wow, this is actually a thing. This is something that's happening here. And in the last few years, the next few years after that, there was more talk about, you know, vulnerability of athletes post-career and depression of that athletes are experiencing. And I was just kind of interested in that. How do we support athletes and realize like they're way more than their performance? You know, if you're like focused on running a laps around a track, that like you know you want to be able to like, is this all I can do? Is this what defines me? Because that's what I'm here feeling from like the organizations, like there's nothing else to repurpose me with here. And so you kind of recognizing, okay, like I'm a whole person, I'm a whole being, and I don't have to let those things define me. And I kind of did my own personal work on that and felt pretty good about it, but I could see that other people were struggling in that.
Did you do that on your own, or did you have, you said you had someone guiding you through that?
No, I kind of did that by myself.
Okay.
But then when I felt like there was support for performance, but there wasn't necessarily support for like those big questions of like.
Well, that's, I feel like we've talked about before how in sport, especially at the high level like that, it's sort of necessary to remove yourself from the outcomes and the performances, but all the chatter, all the actions, all the evidence around you is to the opposite of that.
Yeah,
it's very
exactly.
hard to just keep that inside and know, like, I have to have this other perspective of myself, but all the motivation, all the money, all the press is like, well, it's on your achievements, so it's just very hard to separate those two.
Because the culture, exactly,
yeah,
like
the culture.
The culture is prizing that and valuing that, right? So, but it's destructive if an athlete, you know, fully identifies like that. So,
but it's very easy. I see how it's so easy for that to happen.
Of course it can. Yeah, exactly. Like we live in a world, you have to pay bills.
Yep.
You have to, you know.
There's winners and losers.
Yeah, exactly. So there's the duality of like those two, both those things being true at the same time. And
it's tricky.
Yeah. And then I wanted to go back. I was still so interested in psychology, and I'd done a certification in kind of like sports performance and was working with athletes. And I realized actually sometimes like it's not about performance for athletes who are struggling. They've got other things going on. And I, at the time, I wasn't set up to be able to actually help those athletes. So I had to refer them out. And part of me wanted to do more in that area. So I went back to, I'd already done a master's in counseling and education. So I decided I want to go back and get a license as a mental health counselor versus do more in the performance area. I felt like there was this need of like this cross section of actually we want performance, but we also need to be able to help people's mental health and struggles in personal life. And that was kind of where I felt more pulled towards. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I did, because, you know, once I kind of went into that avenue, people were still coming to me as athletes, but they were coming in with such a range of issues that were so far outside performance mm-hmm. only, and some of the struggles in, you know, just in their life, or some, you know, different assault things, or mm-hmm. Anxiety or depression that, you know, exist, that like they're really struggling with, that like not always about performance at all.
Right. So it's like some facets of your coaching before, it was like, I'm going to teach you how to deal with the undue pressure of, you know, lining up at the Olympics or at the mm-hmm. state meet trying to win.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of it, it was like, oh no, your sport is actually like a way that like other problems in your life are manifesting, kind of like mm-hmm. a health, like you would maybe wouldn't be as affected. It's sort of like how with our physical mm-hmm. health, like sometimes you notice the problems first when mm-hmm. you're running. You're like, yeah. Oh, I was a little tired today, or oh, I was a little off. Like, what, yeah. there's something going on.
Can expose
so
it.
Kind of almost like
yeah.
the sport exposed some yeah. of those bigger things.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, right, you're going out there and you're putting yourself out there, you're putting yourself in these vulnerable positions, you're yeah. getting to know, you're getting to know fear, you're getting to know vulnerability, you're getting to know, you know, disappointment, right? You're kind of eating those things for breakfast, yeah. right? And, you know, that can be stressful. So, you know,
we can all use strategies for that side,
yeah,
but then 100%. At another level,
yeah. But then, you know, like you're getting rewarded for performance, right? And then this this drive to achieve can kind of skew people to the point where they're like, who am I without achieving, right? And they can lose sight of that, right? So it's kind of, it's, you know, what creates somebody to believe that they're defined by their achievement, right? And we can look at like all the different factors of that. But it's been able to help people kind of gain the perspective that like, this is important, but like there's other things that are important, and how do we ground ourselves in like as a complete human and a whole being. And you don't have to throw out and say, oh, competition doesn't matter, which is kind of like, you know, just like throwing it out the window. Like, that's not what I'm talking about either. It's just like, yeah, these things are important. You know, but they're risky, actually. Sport is like the riskiest career you could ever choose, right? You get a call the day before, like there goes your like big performance of the year. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of cruel in that regard. So you're putting a lot into something, you're not always getting the exact return out. And you know, it's kind of been there for an athlete and been like, it's okay, you know, you could win and that's awesome, but you could also lose and that can be disappointing, and you'll be okay and you've got the support to get through this, and you're still loved. as a person. It's not about your performance, actually, which sounds counterintuitive, but actually frees athletes up to just go and enjoy the thing that they love. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of my job is helping athletes do that, actually. They think that the more higher performing they are, the more serious they have to get, mm-hmm. to the point where they've like kind of like they're nearly putting in so much weight and stress on their performance that like it like locks up their whole body physically nearly as well as mentally. And actually been like, hey, that's, you know, your performance, you as a person isn't defined by that, and like lightens that stress and helps them then, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, and bring back that playfulness and that, you know, joy that they maybe started with, and like, and then that's really good news for people that like, I can actually have fun and enjoy this and I can perform better. And like, that's what I see, and like, I'm not just saying that, I see it every day, and like, it's great news to share with people. Because we can just gonna get so defined by our achievements and think, oh, that's what people like me for. Yeah. That's whom I must be. Yeah. And start to see that like yeah. reflected.
So like the forces of the sport at the high enough level can kind of like warp even a healthy mindset.
Yeah.
So you kind of got to unravel that. And then there's also, of course, you know, like other issues that can come in just from anyone's mental health being off.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned, I remember the last time we talked about this, it wasn't on the air, like this isn't unique to elite athletes or professional athletes or even athletes like at the very top of the races that you're seeing, like even young athletes
oh, yeah.
come to you with these problems. So like, can you talk a little bit about that, like how common that is
yeah.
and what the drivers are risks, help ways we can help young athletes?
Oh, yeah. I see this in teenage athletes as well as elite athletes, right? That they've found something that they're passionate about and they kind of are identifying with, right? They're just which is a natural age-appropriate thing to do as an adolescent. We start to kind of, oh, this is who I am, and discover, and then they maybe lock onto an identity as an athlete and they get a lot from that, right? They get a social network, they get some recognition, they get positive reinforcement, they get physical well-being, right? That if you take that away from an injury, right, you're now, this athlete lost, you know, their structure of their day, they've lost that physical outlet to kind of, that shifts everything mentally, physically, and all those good endorphins and everything else. They're also using this like, oh, there, if I'm not competing, then I don't feel like an athlete. And if I'm not competing, then, oh, that must mean I'm not an athlete. And then who am I then, right? And they also lose, you know, maybe disconnected from the team, where the team are off going competing and they're at home and they're not having that social connection. So there's a bit of FOMO, which sounds like, oh, just FOMO, but like that's actually a really difficult feeling. And this exclusion as like human beings, we don't like that. We don't feel like ostracized. That's like the probably torture in other cultures to feel like outside the group, right? So there's, that can happen at a young age. You don't have to be a professional for that to happen. And then that kid is in a very vulnerable position, right? They've lost their like mental, it's kind of like, if you look at what happens in our brains when we've exercised, it's amazing. It lights up. It's like crazy in the fMRI imaging machines. If you're losing that every day, your brain's kind of like offline a little bit. That can be like such a withdrawal. It's actually like a chemical withdrawal as well. So you know, anyone who's kind of goes from like training every day or whatever, certain days a week, to like nothing, like that's like, I know I wouldn't feel good off that, you know. And I don't even train that much, but like you get used to that as well. So there's this kind of like physical things that's going on, but then all those emotional things I'm talking about, like the left out of teams, or like feeling, you know, just feeling sad and disappointed, and then, you know, questioning who am I, and like it can be very hard for athletes to experience that.
That can be a really rocky time too, because like I know, I'm thinking back to my own career, and my first major injury wasn't until I got to college, and you know, I wasn't training hard enough in high school to really have big layoffs, and so you're kind of just dealing with that the first time, that first like shock of like, whoa, this is taken away. Who am I? Sorting this out. I'm not with my teammates. And I can think of quite a few athletes who, like, when they had that first big injury, it was, like, really, like, a kind of a perspective-shifting hard time for them. I feel like there should be a way, maybe now it's a little different, to, like, support those athletes better, because you're at college, but you might only be, like, 19 or 20. And, like, yeah, you're, like, figuring out your identity without a sport, and it just can be a whole, you know, I remember when that happened to my husband in college, and he was very like moody, and like it feels bigger than it is, you know. Of course, zooming out, you know, you'll be okay now 20 years later, but in the moment you're just like, it's big, it feels like a lot.
Right, and everything feels so, like when you're younger, like what's happening right now is like everything.
It's
like that, like short-term focus, and it's just like this, okay, if I'm missing this meet, this is a disaster, right? Versus like,
oh, every season felt like the most important season. You know?
And it kind of has to, in a way, if you perform, but then it zoom out, it's not, right? So it's like that perspective is not always there. And if you think about it, if this is your first injury, like, or first kind of layoff, it's like, wait there, what is this? Like, this is all you've known, you know? So it's easy to minimize it, go, oh, like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's a big deal to somebody when they're going through it.
And maybe for coaches, like college coaches, to kind of have an awareness of like, even though we've seen 10 teams come through, 20 teams come through, like for each kid, this might be the first time they're dealing with this thing happening. You know, as a coach, you see so many injuries, but zoom in and just remind to that person, this might be like a life-changing experience they're going through.
Yeah, exactly. And like having like some of those things, some of the coach interventions that are shown to be helpful, it, like having that positive psychosocial, you know, support and help athletes like be self-compassionate, right? Because a lot of athletes are so hard on themselves, right? And they might be lacking that self-compassion, right? So if you think about it, like that ability to like push themselves so hard has probably made them a good athlete, but like there's a threshold to that too. So like now they've pushed themselves over that edge, more pushing themselves isn't actually going to help them. It's actually hurting them at that point, right? So help coaches being able to recognize that person's lacking in some self-compassion. How do we foster that? How do we like help them kind of live into their values outside of sport as a whole being? How do we de-emphasize achievements and outcomes, you know, even though it's this balance of like, yeah, we want achievements and outcomes, but actually your well-being is more important to me. And coaches really expressing that and holding both of those things to be true at the same time.
I think that's maybe where like the nuance gets lost sometimes. People just hear de-emphasizing the competition and it's like, no, it's so that you can unlock your full potential. There has to be that balance.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that and I think it is sometimes like there's a bit of sounds like an irony there. Like actually, when we focus on the process, and this is kind of coming back to the sport performance psychology. If you're focusing on the process, enjoying the journey, as cliche as that sounds, actually, that's actually like a really good formula for like success. If coaches are listening to this, like by doing that, it's not like I'm going to make your athlete softer. Like actually their happiness and enjoyment is going to help them be more sustainable in the sport, help them actually want it more, help them like stay with it and ultimately like reach their potential. And I think, you know, you can't really ask for much more than that, right? Because people confuse like the seriousness, like the more serious they want to get their sport, that like they have to like, you know, remove the phone.
Yeah, or professionalism. I feel like that's synonymous with like removing fun elements.
Yeah, right. And then it's just like, oh, I have to do everything so robotic because I'm being a professional. It's like now they've like completely lost their like enthusiasm and just they get burned out because it's not your whole being and have other needs outside of performance. And it's not bad to like honor those things, you know. But yeah, like, you know, kind of recognizing that athletes are vulnerable when they get injured or when they're transitioning out of sports and kind of having screening tools and conversations around that and you know, really kind of not just like crossing your fingers and hoping, oh, I hope they're okay. Just being like, hey, like we're going to screen you when you're healthy. So then when something does crop up, this screening tool doesn't seem like, why are you giving this to me now? Just because I'm not feeling, you know, that like this is just incorporated into your like system as a coach or, you know, this is just something that's done regularly anyways. And so then you can identify, oh, there's a bit of a change there. How do we like address that or like look, explore that, you know? And the more we can do that and normalize these things, the better.
Yeah, right. I think that's totally a good point. I feel like when you only start to broach these topics when you think something's off, I feel like people get a bit weird, defensive, or oh, I'm fine, or oh, like... Yeah, it's just like checking in with your physical therapist or your strength coach and maintenance work. So that's a really good, making it mainstream and comfortable to talk about is like so important.
Yeah. I do think there's a bit of it, like I hope there's a bit of a trend upwards in regards to this. And like, you know, this idea that like if your leg was sore, you'd have no problem going and getting some physio on that and maybe even doing some core work before you get injured, you know, that like you can identify, okay, there's things I could be doing to, you know, check in on my well-being or check in on my mental health or like, you know, even kind of the mental side of sport, how I'm feeling emotionally and about everything. Like the whole time so that it's you don't have to wait till there's a crisis, you know. And the more that's kind of like the more like the top athletes are talking about it, it's really helpful for me actually now when I'm working with young people to be like, did you see this athlete talking about it? They know they can, they're starting to realize, oh yeah, that athletes are talking to somebody and doing that work. And it's important because we look at athletes' physical ability and what like shoes they're wearing, or like in some other sports, like how much money they're making or whatever. But I'm like, well, what's their like mental kind of approach? What happens when they are disappointed? What happens when they lose? What happens, you know, have they ever been injured? Like looking at kind of how they are mentally handling things, mm-hmm. to me is like the thing that they should be modeling.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I would love to link to some resources. Do you have anything more to say about like resources or like proactive things that athletes can do, coaches can do, parents can do, or like suggestions for information sources?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's you know, I think there's still some barriers. Like, I think there's what are some barriers that are like in our control and what are out of our control to, you know, for people seeking care or getting the help they need. And like, I'd love to be like, oh, everyone just, you know, you just go find somebody and there's somebody great there for you. And the reality is that's not necessarily always true either, right? So actually, you know, having a good mental health provider, having good people that you trust and care about and like that you know you can trust and that you have a positive engagement with is really important. But also like, you know, there is a limit. I don't know if you're aware, but like there is a shortage of mental health clinicians nationally at the moment. People are like having a really hard time. So it's not, I understand there's a limit. Sometimes resources aren't always there. But there is also this idea of like the stigma is still stopping people. So there could be people that could get access to some help and they're not because of their own beliefs, or there's the culture of like, this is still something we don't do. And that's stopping people. And like, I think if we can shift that stigma, that's going to be really helpful while hopefully we increase the availability of those resources. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to say about that. And then, you know, I think it's just kind of recognizing this and recognizing other things, that there's cultural barriers as well. Like, you know, certain sports are more open to this than others. There's some kind of, yeah, there's just other barriers out there as well. So kind of on the cultural side as well. And yeah, there's some racial disparities, there's socioeconomic inequalities, there's non-heterosexual and transgender athlete like barriers there for care. There's some religious and ethnic beliefs that can be preventing people from accessing this. And so I think like there's more we can do to kind of realize that actually getting help is good for people's well-being, but also good for performance. And you know, hopefully people, there's more to do in terms of change and access to that. Because I don't know about you, but like I didn't grow up in a culture that was something that people did or do. And yeah, so it's like you don't know what you don't know, right? Yeah. So I definitely can relate to that. Like I didn't know, I didn't access that. I didn't know what that is. But now I do. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah, love how much more freely it's talked about. I do think that helps when athletes aren't ashamed to be like, so my therapist, or oh, I talked to the, because same. Yeah, growing up, it was more that model I felt of like the robot athlete, or like talking to someone meant you were like crazy, which is like so not the case. So like I've talked casually with a sports psychologist offered by USATF after an injury. But then even after like disappointing performances, like after Beijing, I wanted to talk to a therapist, right? Because that really affects your career. Mm-hmm. That's really something that's going to be like, I have not been through this before. Mm-hmm. It was like, it felt really big, you know, up close. And so I think that helps too, just that mindset of like, you can't make a mistake. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is like, yeah, you can make a mistake. If you need someone to help you get through a really crazy time, like, get the help, move on. Yeah. You know, I feel like, I hope it not from the outside, it didn't look like I just blasted back into the racing world, you know, so.
Yeah. That things that can be difficult for people, and it's okay to get support.
Yeah.
It can be overwhelming. Absolutely.
And being able to justify it. I remember thinking like, oh, this is silly. Like, I don't, like, that's not like a real problem. But like, if it is a problem to you, it is a problem to you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, exactly. And it's not a weakness to get help.
Right.
You know, that's the interesting, you know, that's mm-hmm. some of the beliefs as well, right? Oh, I'm weak if I need to do mm-hmm. this work. No, you're not actually.
Yeah, and it's so common. I guess that's just the main takeaway too. Yeah. Like varying levels of issues, but like very common.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that, Molly. Absolutely. And you know, when you kind of do the work that you need to do, like where you can grow in your resilience mm-hmm. and grow in your determination and shift those emotions and actually make them really work for you.
Yeah.
free you from some of those things. So anything else you're thinking about?
Yeah, I guess just like noting that we're talking about this in the context of like elite athletes or high level athletes or just athletes like sport, because you could have a whole nother podcast about like general mental health mm-hmm. issues in this country and how poorly they're handled mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. the issues there. So yeah, I think a lot of us have family members that are affected by that, either close or extended family. And so this, we're just zooming in our lane, you mm-hmm. know, we're athletes. And we do see how this can totally mm-hmm. impact not only your performance, but just like your life. So mm-hmm. definitely important to talk about. And yeah, we're glad that people are talking about it. And we have an expert on our as a co-host. So we thought, hey, we've been meaning to do this for a while. So we're glad to just get some. There's more resources being added every year. We need more research, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that, the gaps in research and
I think it's a growing area, like looking at like mental illness and in elite populations. Like if we look at, you know, the research on like knee surgeries or hamstrings, there's like thousands and thousands of research articles, you know. And so in comparison, this is kind of a newer area to be looking at. But I mean, I think there's loads of areas in research that have not been exhausted yet or looked at completely. So, you know, I'm happy to share, hopefully on this podcast, if there's anything I see that's coming up that interesting me that feels like appropriate to share. As I kind of try to keep my ear to the ground in emerging research. But yeah, I think, you know, I think athletes can be so tough and so strong, and it's hard for them to feel like they can show any kind of vulnerability or weakness. And I just want to say to people who struggle with that is that, you know, it takes a lot of courage to do that. And actually, it's really healthy to like express some of those feelings and big difficult emotions and get the support, because they're actually not as scary or bad when you do that. And they actually, you end up realizing like, oh, I don't have to be fearful about that. I can express those things, and actually frees you up then to, you know, go out in the world and be a whole healthy human being.
Totally. Yeah. You kind of take the power from them.
Yes,
you're in control.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, athletes love being in control.
Control freaks.
No, but there is this,
especially
like,
track athletes.
It's yeah. So it's not about control. I mean, it is. It's about like being with and being okay with what is there, and it's not necessarily. It is, I suppose, in a way, controlling what you can control.
Yeah.
But it's not in the way of like. We can allow it, you know. It's a healthy way to control it.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think we covered a lot of topics. Was there anything else that you wanted to bring up from your research or your experiences?
I don't know. I see when people do have the courage to kind of share and do the work. I see the shift. I see the change, and it's just like it can be a positive thing to, you know, go towards those scary things that you might be kind of trying to exile in yourself. Oh, I don't want to think about those fearful things or whatever. And when people are able to kind of do the work around that, then they're not, you know, the slave to those fears mm-hmm. and those exiled parts of themselves, and they can, you know, show up, you know, in their true self and courageously and calmly and, and they can do their thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and it I encourage people to do that if they need it, even though it's like a little uncomfortable. It's like when you're going into a hard workout and you get that feeling of like, ick, I don't want to do it. That's a good sign. So
yeah, exactly. You're getting to know that part. Yes. And it's all good.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll drop some more resources in the links, as I said earlier. So check out our blog, keeping-track.com. And Ro, are you open for business, or are you full of clients? Should people call you?
Come to mama. Oh, look it.
Yeah.
It depends on.
Or we
can
list. Maybe we can list a few.
Yeah,
how
yeah,
to find,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
A provider.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to say yeah, but then also I think it sometimes depends on where people are located and also what they're struggling with. And sometimes if people are struggling with mental health disorders and they have to be in their state to work with somebody who's registered in their state. So I work with people in different states with more on the performance side of things. And then if I work with people in Rhode Island, sometimes if I can work with them more on the mental health stuff. So that's just getting into the weeds on how like things are structured with licenses and things like that. But if anyone ever has questions, I try to be responsive with emails and help people where I can. And then if we're a good fit, great, I'll work with people. And if not,
and that's via believeiam.com, or do you have your own
just row@believeiam.com.
okay,
thanks Molly.
Cool.
Thank you guys. Yeah, be well. Yeah. Mind yourselves. Be real.
Hashtag be real.
Yeah, all right, thanks Mel.
Thanks for keeping track.
Peace.
Keep track. Hi listeners, we wanted to take a moment to tell you about another podcast from Evergreen Podcasts and Sound Talent Media called Pit Lane Parlay. Pit Lane Parlay is the go-to podcast for IndyCar and motorsports related news. Each episode, we discuss things like our favorite drivers, news clips from the last week, and generally giving each other a hard time about predictions we've made in the past and or life stories that have come up recently. We really have a lot of fun with it and really enjoy each other's company, and we hope you can come join us too. Join Pit Lane Parlay by following us on your favorite podcast today.